नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
Okay, I will read the first verse of Krishna's speech when he starts speaking to Arjuna in the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita. Shiva Bhagavan Uvacha Asochyan Anvasochaha Tvam Pragya Vadam Cha Vashase Gatasun Agatasum Cha Na Anushachanti Panditaha Sri Bhagavan Uvacha Asochyan Anvasochastvam Pragyavadamscha Vashase Gatasuna Gatasumscha Nanushochanti Panditaha Shri Bhagavan Uvacha Asochyan Anvasochamstvam Pragyavadamscha Vashase Gatasunnagatasumscha Nanushochanti Panditaha Asochyan Anvasochastvam Pragyavadamscha Vashase Gatasunnagatasumscha Nanushochanti Panditaha Shri Bhagavan Uvacha The Supreme Personality of Godhead said Asochyan Not worthy of lamentation. Anvasochaha. You are lamenting. Tvam. You. Pragyavadan. Learned talks. Cha. Also. Vashase. Speaking. Gata. Lost. Asun. Life. Agata, not past. Asun, life. Cha, also. Na, never. Anushochanti, lament. Panditaha, the learned. Translation. The Supreme Personality of God had said, while speaking learned words, your mourning for what is not worthy of grief. Those who are wise lament neither for living nor for the dead. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. The Lord at once took the position of the teacher and chastised the student, calling him indirectly a fool. The Lord said, "You are talking like a learned man. But you do not know that one who is learned, one who knows what is body and what is soul, does not lament for any stage of the body, neither in the living nor in the dead condition. As explained in the later chapters, it will be clear that knowledge means to know matter and spirit and the controller of both. Arjuna argued that religious principles should be given more importance than politics or sociology. But he did not know that knowledge of matter, soul, and supreme is even more important than religious principles. And because he was lacking of that knowledge, he should not have posed himself as a very learned man. As he did not happen to be a very learned man, he was consequently lamenting for something which was unworthy of lamentation. The body is born and is destined to be vanquished today or tomorrow. Therefore, the body is not as important as the soul. One who knows this is actually learned, and for him there is no cause for lamentation, regardless of the condition of the material body. Śrīla Prabhupāda ki
jai.
Śrī Bhagavān uvāca asocchānān vaśocchastvam pragyavādam ścavāśase gatasuna gatasumścānanu socchanti panditah. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, while speaking learned words, your mourning for what is not worthy of grief. Those who are wise lament neither for the living nor for the dead. Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthāva Tare Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swaminiti Namine Namaste Sarasvati Devi Goravani Pracharine Nirvisheshi Sunyavadi Paschatya Desha Tarine Vancha Kalpa Tarudescha Kripa Sindhu Vevacha Patitanam Pavane Bhyo Vaishnave Bhyo Namo Namah Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda
Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Srila Prabhupada explains that Krishna is being very sarcastic. And there is a very good reason for Krishna's sarcasm in this particular occasion. In the previous verse, Sanjaya explains that when Krishna was listening to Arjuna, he was smiling. And really, Krishna wanted to laugh. Because Arjuna, in the seventh verse, he said, Shishyastiham Shadimam Tvam Prabhupada. I am your disciple. I am totally surrendered unto you. Whatever you will do, whatever you will say, will do. But then in the next verse, he says, Nayotsyayati Govinda. I will not fight. I will do whatever you will say, but I will not do this and that and this and that. And ultimately, I will not do what you want to do. But I'm surrendered soul. I'm your disciple. I'm taking initiation from you now. I'm ready to do whatever you say, but there are some conditions. There are strings attached. And Krishna is laughing. And ultimately, he is laughing at us because he knows that what we say is often case is not what we mean. It's actually the condition of the conditioned soul, or situation of the conditioned soul, is that we say something externally and we accept something externally, but really our acceptance is very shallow. It's not very deep. It doesn't penetrate the heart. And the reason for our external or superficial acceptance of something, in particular spiritual life or guru, is that it brings some mental satisfaction. You know, everyone has a guru and I also have a guru. Everyone is a surrendered soul. I'm also a surrendered soul. We are supposed to do like this. This is our culture. This is what we should do. And there are so many different aspects of this problem which are there. And this is actually very clearly demonstrated by Arjuna himself. And that's the reason why Krishna smiles. Why Krishna actually not even smiles, he almost laughs. Because Arjuna very consistently, even before that, calls him Madhava, he calls him Rishikesh, he calls him Keshava, he calls him Madhusudana. This is all names of God. So Arjuna is speaking with God. And moreover, he says, I know you're God, but I do not want to fight. I'm surrendered unto you, but I still keep the right to decide with myself. The ultimate decision is within my mind. And maybe you will help, but ultimately I don't believe that you will help me. So that's the unfortunate situation we find ourselves in the spiritual path. But there is one very fortunate aspect of it, is that Krishna, even though we may not be 100% sincere, he still accepts even this superficial surrender. But he's not satisfied with this superficial surrender. He wants us to be completely surrendered, but it's the first good step. He says, if you cannot do, and he knows we cannot do anything else, but he says, at least say it superficially. And let's start from this point. Because it's interesting, the whole Bhagavad Gita is between these two points. One is initial surrender of Arjuna, when he says, Shishyastiham Shadimam Tvam Prafanam, I am surrendered soul, please teach me. And the last verse of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Masuchaha, Aham Tvam Sarva Papya Vyas, what is this? Sarva Dharman Parityaja, Mamekam Sharanam Vaja. Bhagavad Gita starts with the statement of Arjuna, I am surrendered soul. And it ends with the statement of Krishna, surrender unto me. Isn't it a little strange? Because from the beginning he says, I am already surrendered unto you. But Krishna goes through the whole, you know, problem and hurdle of explaining to Arjuna what he should do to tell him, surrender unto me. Because he knows that his initial sentiment is just a sentiment. It's a condition of material mind, which is a nice condition, which is a nice sentiment, and he accepts this sentiment, but he knows that it's not very deep. Because it's not the resolve of the soul. It's just some kind of, you know, fluctuation in the mind. At this particular point, because I'm totally, completely dejected, desperate, because I know that it's very difficult to live in this world. Okay, I surrender unto you. Very conditionally, with so many strings attached. But still I do it. But he wants the surrender of the soul, which is much deeper. And for that he speaks Bhagavad Gita. And the whole Bhagavad Gita is between these two acts of surrender. One is superficial surrender, which actually more or less signifies the appearance of Shraddha within the face, within the mind, or within the heart of the living being. This initial Shraddha, or initial face, is very weak and flickering. Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami calls this initial Shraddha as Komal Shraddha. And Komala means pliable. Komala means very flexible, very, you know. Shraddha, yes, I believe, but if the conditions of the external environment will change, then my belief will also change accordingly. You know, here I believe in this, you know, I change my environment and I will believe in something else. It's not very deep. But still it's good. It's a first step. And it's an avoidable first step. We have to go through it. But then, as Rupa Goswami explains, if the bhakti develops within the heart, if the realization is coming within the soul, then the shraddha has to be turned into nishtha, into something which is totally, completely immovable. Because nishtha means stable. Nishtha means very fixed. And this is the real surrender. Between these two, initial sentiment, initial faith in God and initial acceptance that I need to surrender to Him to solve my difficulties and problem, and nishtha, the fixed determination to do bhakti, no matter what, there is a very difficult space which we will have to cross over. And this difficult space is indeed the most difficult. When you reach the stage of nista, it becomes more or less simple. But in these initial stages of devotion, it is difficult. And therefore, Krishna, more or less, and the whole Bhagavad Gita is actually doesn't go further. Srila Prabhupada usually said that Bhagavad Gita is ABC. Even though it's a very, you know, deep and profound book with a lot of spiritual knowledge, still it takes us to the stage of nista, when we are totally, completely resolved to follow this path of self-surrender, of self-dedication to the Supreme Lord. And after that, there is a whole realm of spiritual development. You know, we know that Ruchi is there, Asakti is there, Bhava is there, and after Bhava, Prema is there, and in Prema there are, you know, all the stages of Prema. Sneha, Mana, and after Mana, Bhava, Mahabhava, and so many other stages of development within the heart, which are very theoretical in our condition. But what is important for us is how to reach to the stage of stability, or the stage of being fixed in devotional service. And of course, what we can see here, why did I have a right to say that Krishna accepts even this superficial, or shall we say hypocritical kind of surrender? Because it is hypocritical. As I said, the reason why people do it, because it gives them some mental satisfaction. It gives them some kind of mental satisfaction. I belong to this great, great person, you know, like Arjuna says, "Yo, Krishna, you're so great, you're so great, so I surrender unto you." Not because he wants to surrender, not because he believes, not because he really deeply believes that this is good for him, but because, you know, it's just the way to do. And the similar situation we find ourselves in, but as I said, Krishna does accept it, and it is explained very beautifully by Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakura, and I believe also by Srila Prabhupada, in the previous verse where Prabhupada explains, and Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakura explains why Krishna smiles. As I said, Krishna really wants to laugh, because, you know, and if Arjuna was his friend, he would laugh. He would just laugh. He said, "Look how foolish you are. It's a big joke what you're saying. It's really a big joke." But Arjuna in a previous verse said, "I am your disciple. And it's not good to laugh at your disciple." It is okay to laugh at your friend. It's permissible. This is what friends do all the time. But if a disciple comes to a guru and guru starts laughing, "Look how foolish you are, this is really foolish." It's not good. This will be, the disciple will be disheartened. The disciple will be really, you know, he will really lose any enthusiasm. So Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakura explains that there is this junction or sandhya of two different moods. Krishna is changing his mood from being a friend who is laughing, just very heartily, you know, because to being a guru. And therefore, you know, therefore he kind of forces himself not to laugh, but still some kind of smile is there. You know? He wants to laugh, but he controls himself, and therefore he just slightly, prahasaniva bharati, he says, he's as if he's smiling. He's slightly smiling. Not to discourage Arjuna, but at the same time, showing that he knows what is going on within his heart. Arjuna himself doesn't know. Arjuna himself in a total illusion. The self-deception mechanisms are very strong. And they are very strong in all of us. Lord Brahma, while designing this universe, and because this universe is created for us to be in ignorance, This is a special place, special arrangement of the Supreme Lord to help, to facilitate the living beings to be in illusion. They wanted to be in illusion, therefore were in illusion. Nobody is to be blamed. So Lord Brahma, to help us to be in illusion, created this very powerful mechanism of being in illusion, self-deception. We are deceiving ourselves in many different ways. And that's the main reason of our ignorance. We don't know what is what because of this self-deception. You know, we don't really know. We don't want to know. And therefore we don't know. So Krishna knows this condition and therefore he smiles. And he speaks this sarcastic verse saying to Arjuna, you know, Nanusha Chanti Panditaha. Pragyavadamscha Vasya se. He says, you know, Arjuna, you're speaking such a learned words. You're such a learned person. Why don't you follow what you say? What's the reason? You know. When you speak very nicely. But when it comes to your life, you behave in a completely different way. Does it sound familiar? It's a very familiar situation. And it's very interesting that, especially in India, because in India, and also in Russia, somebody told me recently that Russians are white Indians. They're very, very much similar to Indians in one sense. Just the color of the skin is slightly different, but the rest is the same. You know, the people, unless Western people are not like this, but in India and in Russia, people, they like to philosophize. They're very philosophical sometimes. And they know all these philosophies, and like Arjuna says, very significantly Arjuna says, Anushushruma, he says, I have heard something. And he repeats what he heard. You know. When he gives the arguments to Krishna, explaining why he doesn't want to fight, what are the reasons, he says, Anushushruma, I have heard something. You know. I've overheard that this they say that it should be like this, that the women, you know, should be controlled and they should not be, you know, and the Varna Sankara will be there. He gives all these arguments on the basis of overhearing it somewhere. And this is very often the case of us when we heard something, you know. Yes, I heard something in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, you know, often I receive this kind of questions. I heard that somebody, Prabhupada, said that this is like this. Is it true? So, and this is again a very common condition of the living being who are lazy to really apply their minds very deeply to the spiritual science. They think they know. You know, we heard, you know, this is what Krishna says and this is what Arjuna says. And if you ask anyone in India, you know, hardly anyone read Bhagavad Gita. Amazing enough. Practically no one read Bhagavad Gita, but everyone heard something. Everyone, this is how it is, this is how it should be. Everyone knows something, you know, and everyone is a big philosopher, and everyone is a big knower of truths. And actually, that's what Krishna is sarcastic about. He said, oh, Arjuna, you are such a pandit, you are such a learned man, pragyavadam, so you give such a learned discourse here. But why are you lamenting? Because the lamentation which you reveal, the lamentation which is so obvious, reveals your ignorance. Reveals that you don't understand anything. That you don't really understand. That you're as foolish as anyone else. Despite of your knowledge of Shastra and of your understanding or so-called understanding of this, despite of all your arguments, you are foolish because you identify yourself with the body. Grossly, foolishly, hopelessly identify yourself with the body. And this is the reason for your lamentation. And the most amazing thing about this lamentation, which is are the result of identification with the body. Whoever identifies himself with the body, he will lament. He will be in depression. This is my input into medical science. That the root cause of depression is nothing else but identification with matter. The most profound and deepest cause of depression, of all kinds, is nothing superficial, but ultimately the identification with the matter. And whoever, and moreover, one identifies himself with the body, the more he will lament. And ultimately, he will lament over something which he has no control whatsoever. And this is the most foolish. People are really in grief, they're so sad, but they cannot do anything. And they think that, this is even more serious reason for them to be lamenting. But this is actually not the reason to be lamenting, but that's the reason to be joyful, because you shouldn't lament about something which you cannot change. What Krishna is saying here, Gatasana Gastasana Nushachanti Panditaha, he says that the body will die. Whether you lament or not, it will die. It is destined to die. According to the second law of thermodynamics, and according to all the physical laws, and the body is not exempt of these laws, it will die. No one will be able to find a medicine against the death. I had one very foolish friend who thinks himself very intelligent. And usually all the people in this world who thinks themselves very intelligent, they are usually foolish, at least from the highest standard of spiritual philosophy. He's a scientist. And he's a good-hearted person, as many of them. And he's a mathematician himself, and he's into, this information technology and this and that and all this kind of stuff. And at one point, somebody died in his family, as in everyone's family. There is not a single family where somebody didn't die. Actually, there is a little story about it from the Buddhist tradition. Once a Buddha came to a village. And when he came to a village, he gave a discourse. And then at the end, at the very end of the discourse, he was about to leave the place. While old lady came and she was crying and crying and crying and crying. And she had a little baby in her hands. And she said, "This is my son. I gave birth to this son very old. And this is my only son. And I don't have, husband. And my whole hope is, for him. And he died. Your great saint, please revive him." And she's finished. She's crying and crying and crying. And she said, "Please, please, please, what is the use of you being a great saint if you cannot revive my little son?" And he said, "Okay, I will revive you, son, I can do it. But first you have to bring a morsel of mustard seeds from the house where nobody died. That's the only condition." So this is little thing you have to bring me, just the morsel of mustard seeds, and then I will throw these mustard seeds and chant some mantras and he will revive. And she became very hopeful. And she started going from house to house, house to house, house to house, house to house. And she said, "Oh, shoot, shoot." And then at the end of the day, and it was always delayed, and Buddha was patiently waiting under the banyan tree. When she came to him and she said, "Well, so where is the morsel of the mustard seed?" She said, "I couldn't find even one house where nobody died." And he looked at her and said, "Then why should you lament?" This is not within our control. This is something, and when the person is lamenting about something which is totally beyond the sphere of his control. He's a fool. He's Shudra. I was telling this story about my friend, who is a scientist. So, at one point he got a brilliant idea. Because he totally identified himself with the body. And in his family somebody died. And his mother was so morose, and you know. And then he said, "My dear mother, I'm a scientist. And I'm a good scientist. I'm a good mathematician. So I will learn physics. I will learn chemistry. I will learn biology. And I already know the informatical science. I already know mathematics. What I will do, my whole life, I will do it. But ultimately what I will do, I will fix up a computer program which will be able to recreate the molecular structure of somebody, you know, whom we want to have nearby, and it will be, even if he is dead, we will create exactly the same replica, placing all the, because ultimately it's doable, you know, you just have to take all the coordinates of all the atoms within the living body and just place all the atoms in the same exact position through different methods. And in this way, you know, there will be no death anymore. There will be no cause for lamentation. I will do it. And when he told me about this idea, I couldn't contain myself. I was laughing. Because first of all, it's not possible. And second of all, the whole idea is foolish. But because people are totally, hopelessly identify themselves with this body, they will lament. And this is not what Pandit is supposed to do. It is said in the Vedic culture that somebody who laments is Shudra. Why? Because Shudra is the one, this is the, we know we are living in this age of democracy, when everyone is equal and there is no caste, and the castes are bad, and we have to ban it, it's very bad. We all know this, but it's not that everyone is equal. Everyone is not equal. There are different grades of the levels of the consciousness. And in particular, the Vedic culture explains that those who are Shudras, they have one very fundamental defect in their consciousness. And therefore it is said, Kalau Shudra Sambhava, everyone in the age of Kali is a Shudra ultimately. The fundamental defect in the consciousness of the Shudra, or the Swarup Lakshana of a Shudra, the real sign of being a Shudra, is that he identifies himself as the body. And there is no way to somehow or other to convince him that it's not like this. And the way not to become a Shudra is to stop doing it. That's very simple. And therefore it is said that Shudra is someone who will lament. Lament over something which he cannot change anyway. So that's the definition. There was this famous story in Chandogya Upanishad when Maharaja Janashruti came to one sage. And the sage was living under the cart. And he was there and he was very happy. He was just lying down, and Maharaja Janashruti overheard that a couple of sages, they wanted to tease him because he was very proud. He was very pious. He was doing all kinds of charity programs, Food for Life programs, all kinds of programs. You know, he was also into education. You know, he was building in his state free universities. You know, and he was so pious, and he became so proud, you know, I'm so pious, I'm so good, I'm such a good man. So a couple of munis, they took a shape of a bird. And when he was laying down and he was about to sleep, these two birds were flying. And one bird said, "Oh, such a tejas, such a piety, such a force, such a shakti coming, exuding from the body of this king, you know, I cannot even cross over him." And another bird said, no, he's a fool, you know, he's nobody. You know, what kind of piety it is? In his state, there is a real sage. And all the pious activity which he performs, the results of this will be enjoyed by this muni. So this Maharaja Janashruti, he became so, he was shocked. He said, who is this Muni who is living in my state and who will enjoy all the results of my piety? What is this? What kind of arrangement it is? And he came to this Muni and he found him somewhere under the car, some dirty guy was scratching his body, and he was laying, and you know, and he looked at him. And Janashruti said, oh, sage, could you enlighten me? And the sage looked at him and said, get out of here, Shudra. Shudras are not supposed to get Vedic knowledge. There's no way, you know. Shudras are not supposed to, you know, listen Vedas. Because they will not understand anyway anything. They will only misuse this knowledge. They will only bring something bad. You know, the result will be bad. So, and he said, how come I'm Shudra? I'm a king. I'm a very pious king. Don't you know this? No, you're Shudra. Get out of here. Because you're lamenting. Because you're morose. Because you're so sad. And that's the reason, and that's exactly what Krishna is saying here. Oh, dear Arjun, you're Shudra, because you're grieving over something which is not worthy of grief, over something which you cannot change anyway. Because you don't understand this simple little thing that you're not this body, that there is a soul. And Krishna will start to explain in all different ways to Arjuna how to understand that I'm not this body. And he gives a very logical explanation which we have to understand very clearly. Because sometimes living in this day and age of Kali Yuga, where everyone is Shudra and everyone is so grossly, you know, so hopelessly engrossed in the body and the identification of the body, sometimes we also have some doubts. You know, sometimes we think, you know, how is that I'm not this body, you know, because everything which I do is, you know, I do through the body and everything is, it's a deep problem. It's actually the first problem which one has to solve, but this is not the problem which is easily to be solved. It's a very difficult problem. Prabhupada, he repeats it again and again and again. You are not this body, you are not this body, you are not this body. And sometimes people complain that, you know, why Prabhupada repeats it so often. But the simple reason is that, that he's not repeating it often enough. Because even though he repeats it so many times, we still don't understand this. But Krishna gives a very interesting argument, which we have to understand very clearly. He says in this famous verse, the Hinasmin Yathadehe, Kumaram Yavanam Jarata, Tradehantara Praptir, Dirastatrana Muhyatim. He says that you can observe the changes within your body. We actually take the position of the observer. And to be able to observe these changes means that we are not this body. Because if we were this body, we would not be able to observe the changes. Because to observe, you have to take the neutral position outside of this body. You know, if you are something which is changing, you cannot register the changes. Because you are this. You are what is changing, and you know, it means that you cannot see the changes. Because you will be changing, and everything will be changing, and you know that you will not be able to notice the changes, because you will be this changing kind of thing. So what Krishna says, it's a very profound statement which we have to very clearly understand, because you are not changeable. Something within ourselves is not changeable. The body is changing all the time, every second, every millisecond some changes are there. So many reactions are taking place within the body, you know. And this particular moment of time, there is, you know, millions of chemical reactions which are taking place within our body, you know. You know, ribosomes and chromosomes and all these mitochondria, they there's work is going on. It's a big machine, you know, so many things. The processes are going on. Still, you know, I am not changeable. Especially now, I mean, I'm 50 years old, and sometimes I wonder, you know, how is that possible that I'm 50 years old? It's not possible because I can never be 50 years old. It's too old. And I look at myself and all these wrinkles and this and that. And I say, oh, something is wrong here. Because I'm not changeable. And that's exactly, that's the point number one. And before we understand very clearly this, that I'm not changeable and I will never be changeable. I'm eternal because I exist. What Krishna also will say in the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita, he will also say a very important statement that if something exists, and we exist, right? Do I exist? This is the least thing which I know about myself, that I exist. And Krishna says, if you exist, you will exist forever. Because from non-existence to existence, it's not possible. If something exists, Satan Sati, it is said in the Vedic literature, if something exists, it exists forever. And if something doesn't exist, it doesn't exist forever. If non-existence is there, then non-existence is, you know, because if you exist now, in this particular stage, it means that you existed before in some pre-existential stage, but you existed before. Existence, this is, of course, a philosophical point, but at the same time, it's not so difficult to understand. You know, if something exists, it exists. And we exist. I exist. And therefore, as Krishna said, there is no point of grieving over the body. The body will die anyway. Our main emphasis in life, our main direction in life was to take care of the soul. Because the soul exists and it will exist forever. And I have to take care of the soul. Of the eternal existence of the soul. But body will die anyway, no matter what I do. I may take all kinds of chemical medicines which are there. I will die anyway. Ravi Kirti can confirm it, because he was working in reanimatsiya. He used to say that every day somebody dies there. No matter how much reanimatsiya is there. No. You may be under intensive care, you know, somewhere, but no matter how intensive this care is, you cannot change this inevitable fact that the death will come, because this is the law of nature, and this is not what we should be worried about. People, and this is the point of Krishna here, people waste their life worrying about something which is beyond their control, which is not worthy of being worried about. We have to worry, there's no doubt about it. We have to worry, but we have to know about what we have to worry. The learned person, pandit, is somebody who knows about whom he should worry and about what he should worry, about what he should not worry. And ignorant fool is somebody who worries about everything in the world besides the most important thing which he has to worry about. If you ask people in the streets, and usually when you see the people, especially here in Moscow, anywhere else, you know, they're worried, you know, they're so in anxiety, you know, they're running here and there and here and there, and usually they become depressed and sad. And if you ask them why you're depressed, ultimately you will find out they're depressed because of something which they cannot change anyway. They're depressed about some totally foolish reason. But the real point of life is to live in such a way that I only worry and an anxiety and about something which is within the sphere of my influence. And that's exactly what is within the sphere of my influence, is to take care of my soul. Is to provide the future for my soul, for myself, and ultimately, you know, realize this very important knowledge that I am the soul, which is immortal. And if I do this, then I'm learned. If I live according to this motto, that I have to live for the sake of the soul, and I have to relate with everyone else as the souls, not as the bodies which I want to exploit, which I want to somehow or other, you know, push down, but as the souls, parcels of the Lord, then my life is useful. Otherwise my life will be wasted for this all kinds of lamentations, all kinds of useless pursuits, which will not bring about anything. So therefore, you know, Krishna is so heavy here. He said, you know, yeah, so you think you know. And he addresses every one of us. He says, you think you know. You think you know. And you think you know. But you don't know anything. Because if you look deep within your heart, you will see all kinds of strange emotions, strange desires, strange psychological movements, which are based on utter ignorance. And it means that this path which we have to cross over between initial Shraddha, between this Komala Shraddha, or between this pliable and very weak face, and Nishta, which is fixed up face, is not yet over. And it means that we will be waving. It means that, you know, within our mind we will always be wavering. Back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. Should I go this or should I not go this? Should I follow this or should I not follow this? Is it good or is it bad? You know, is it good for me or not good? You know. And it means, and Krishna says, before that point you're full. And you will remain full. But, you know, because you're a nice full, I will give you some hint of how to get rid of this, you know, follow this path. But we have to be very clear about our status, about the state of our consciousness, that we are fools. And Krishna says here, this is his glorious start of Bhagavad Gita, he says, this is the point, the step number one. Just be very clear about the step. You are fool, despite of all your knowledge. Despite of all the shlokas which you may or may not know, despite of all the lectures which you may or may not heard, despite of all these, you know, things which makes you little proud about yourself, you're fool. Because still strange desires are within your heart, which is contrary to the eternal benefit of the soul. Strange psychological movement and psychological reactions are there within your heart. And it means the ignorance is there. It means that you still didn't work out this very essential thing, that you are the soul which is eternally with Krishna. And if you know this, what is the result? What is the external sign of this? How do you know that somebody is self-realized person? So it's very simple. He becomes happy. He doesn't lament. He is happy in any situation of life. There is this little story about Socrates. When Socrates was about to die, he was condemned to death, doomed to drink some poison, some special poison. And everyone around him was lamenting. Everyone was saying, oh, teacher, oh, guru, oh, such a terrible thing happened to you. Besides him, he was happy. And actually it was funny because when he was being judged, you know, he was doing everything possible to get this death sentence. You know, some foolish people came and said he is corrupting the youngsters among the, you know, he's saying that they shouldn't worship this, you know, gods which we worshipped. He's totally, completely dismantling all our great tradition, this and that. So he was called. to be judged. And I said, you know, this is this is the judgment which should be given. And they will listen. And he said, no, I'm not guilty. And then he started challenging everyone. He started challenging and accusing everyone, including the judges and this, and saying, you're fools, you know. And they said, oh, maybe we will give you some little judgment, some little punishment, you know, for this, because there are something to what these people said. He said, no, no, I've not accept this little punishment. No, because I'm not guilty. You know, what you have to do, you have to totally justify me, and then you have to also pay all my debts. And because he was a philosopher, he had a lot of debts. And he also had to do this and that and that. And he was behaving in such a challenging way that the judges, they had to give him this, you know, heavy punishment, death penalty. So, and when he was about, you know, he was, for some days he was there. And the person who was supposed to prepare his poison for him to take, he was delaying because he didn't want it. And then ultimately Socrates came to him and said, why does it take so long for you to prepare this poison? He said, because I don't want to do it and I'm really dragging the time. He said, no, please hurry up, you know, jaldi karo, because, you know, I want to experience it as soon as possible. He said, no. He said, no, it's nice, I want to die, it's interesting. What will happen with me? And when somebody said, why you're not afraid? He said, please tell me what I should be afraid of. I don't understand what I should be afraid of. He said, oh, death is so terrible. He said, no, what's so terrible about death? You know, if I'm not eternal, if I'm just, you know, a pile of chemicals, and if this pile of chemicals somehow or other will be dismantled, so I will not feel anything after death. What's so fearful about this? And if I'm eternal, what is the reason to be fearful about you? There's no reason to be fearful in either case. If I'm eternal soul, I'm happy because I'm eternal soul. And if I'm not eternal soul, I'm also happy. So what's the big deal? This body will be destroyed. And that's it. But he was teaching everyone, and he was saying this, that, you know, if you learn it, then you know how to live. And if you learn it, if you really learn it, if this knowledge really went deep within your psyche, within your heart, if it's really realized knowledge, then you become happy. There's no doubt about it. You become totally, completely, absolutely happy, and no depressions whatsoever will be able to overpower you. This is the sign. And if you didn't realize this knowledge, then you will lament. And Krishna says, this is the ultimate medicine for all kinds of depressions. This medicine is contained within this book. This medicine is, if you want to be free from all kind of lamentation, if you want to be free from all kind of grief, if you want to be free from all kinds of mental agony and agitation, then you have to take this knowledge. But not just here and there and somewhere else, you know, overhearing something here, but really get deep into it. And be totally, completely convinced that this is the way. This is the reality. This is the truth. This is what we have to do. And there is no other way. Everything else is just illusion, Maya. Everything else is just the cause for lamentation, for grief. And, you know, we will remain with all our unresolved problems till the very moment of our death. And we will die with all these problems, grieving over something. And then we will have another chance to be born again. So that's what this book is all about. And it starts with Krishna's smile. And it ends with Krishna's smile. At the end, Krishna also smiles. Because he always smiles. Because he has the transcendental knowledge. Therefore he smiles. You know, he is always happy. And he wants everyone to be happy. Therefore he gives all this knowledge and he says, this is the way. And nothing else There is nothing short of it. There's nothing short of it will not help you. The only thing which will help you when you realize this knowledge. Everything else which is short of this will not be able to help. It will be just some kind of self-deception or illusion. But if the knowledge is there, and if this understanding is there, then everything else will follow in a very harmonious way. So that's what Prabhupada explains here. Krishna says to Arjuna, you're a fool. And I congratulate you with this. Let's establish this fact very firmly and go from this point onwards towards the complete destruction of evil within your heart, which will take place when you follow the last command of Krishna. Sarvadharman parityaja mama kamsharam raja aham tvam sarva bhavibhyam moksha syami masuchara man manabhava man bhaktumam yajimam namaskurumam vaishyasi satyam te pratijani priyosime. Okay. Thank you very much. Any questions? Or what shall we do? Today is 8th March, but there is no women here on this side. This is priority. It's only men. All the men are hiding from women on this day. In our temple, they declare that all the men should fast till 3 o'clock today to celebrate Women's Day. It's almost 3 o'clock, so we can break the fast.
Maharaj, I wanted to tell one more point on this. They say that we should not ask women's age. For example, in hospital, when I ask to a woman, what is your age, they go, Nijna Ashto Zinshan and Nijas Prashit. I think we should ask every time to remind them that you are getting old.
No, you should say it like this. I know that you're 16 years old, but... Can you... Because it's a fact. Everyone is eternally young. Krishna remains always 16 years old. You know, he looks 16 years old. And everyone wants to follow Krishna, but... Yeah, that's foolishness. That's people foolishness because they cannot understand. It's so simple to understand this that, you know, it's something from within tells you, yeah, this is right, this is correct. This is how it should be. Yes, I know this. I know I'm eternal because I exist. And exist means always. Na sato vidyate bhavo na bhavo vidyate sataha. Uvayor at vidrishtantas tvanayos tattva darshi bihih. So those who see the truth, tattva darshi, they can see that if something exists, it existed eternally. And this is so simple. So simple.
In material life, tensions are unavoidable. How one can control, because a lot of times situations are beyond our control.
So one has to know very clearly that it's beyond my control, and therefore why should I be tense about it? It's beyond my control. It's really, you know, it's not a question of kind of... Yes, it's beyond my control, therefore, you know, why should I worry about it? I shouldn't worry about it. I should be calm and composed about it and try to do my best where I can do my best. And if I cannot, why? What is the reason? How I will help? I will not help. By worrying, I will only make it worse. By worrying, we completely lose the clear vision, clear understanding of what we should do. Therefore, one has to be very clear what is within my control and what is outside of the sphere of my control. And if it's outside, I should stop worrying about it. And, you know, if it's within the sphere of control, I should try my best to change the bad or uncomfortable or unjust situation. But again, if I tried my best and it didn't work, then again, why should I worry? Why should I be hang up about it? Why should I, you know? I did my best. There is no use. We will not help. You know, people have this anger and all this unresolved emotion, and that will build up within our psyche, and it will create all kinds of problems, physical problems, emotional problems. All kinds of problems are coming from this. And therefore, in Patanjali Muni, in his Yoga Sutra, the first Yoga Sutra says, Yoga Chitta Vritti Nirodha. Yoga means complete elimination of all the fluctuations or, you know, agitation within the mind. And that's also Krishna says. Krishna says that somebody who knows the truth and somebody who follows this path of Buddhi Yoga, or yoga of your intelligence, he becomes equipoised. He becomes very calm and sober. And he says, shantim richhati, param shantim richhati. You will not only obtain peace, you will obtain the param shantim. Param shantim means the highest bliss, which is beyond ordinary shanti, calmness. So it's again based on knowledge. Our psychological reaction, yes, tension will be, I mean, the tense situation will be there. Difficult, uncomfortable, bad situations will be there. But according to the stage of our realization, our reaction will be different. And that's what we have to work. That's what we can change. We may worry more, we may worry less. Or we may not worry at all. And not worrying at all doesn't mean to be cold-hearted, doesn't mean to be, you know, indifferent, doesn't mean it means that I'm not worried, but I'm still there. My consciousness is there. I'm trying to solve it, but if I cannot solve it, then I don't worry about it. And I know it's easier to say it than to do, but according to the progress of spiritual progress, according to the extent I don't identify myself with the body, I will. This will change. This will be. We will see the tangible progress in this regard. We will see that I become much more happy. It was a very interesting situation in my own life, because like Arjuna, I became very morose before I met with devotees. You know, it was such a difficult situation for me. Psychologically, it was so extremely difficult. Although externally, there was no reasons for this. Externally, there was not much reasons for this. But I lost my sleep, I lost everything, you know. And but I just graduated from Moscow State University with excellence, you know. And then I was in postgraduate studies. The career was in front of me. You know, I had always had money. You know, my grandfather was a professor. He was sending me very, you know, good money. All of my fellow students, they had much less. You know, I didn't have any problems externally. Internally, it was so much problems. And then I became a devotee. I started chanting. What kind of devotee? I didn't even identify at this time. I was just started chanting. And I became so happy. And then KGB came to me and they said, we will stop you from, you know, this and some other problems. And then I was kicked out from Moscow, and they took me, they interrogated me, this and that. I still was happy. So I came back to my hometown, and I was there with my grandfather, and he was so sad, you know. He said, what happened to you? You know, you were so, you know, you were so nicely situated, you were going up and up and up, and everything now destroyed, KGB, this and that. And I was sitting in front of him and smiling. And he was lamenting. And then he looked at me and he said, "Why do you smile?" He said, "Because I'm happy. I don't know why." That's the reason. I don't know why. Because and there was so many reasons for me to worry, but still I was not worried. Because what can you do, you know? To worry about KGB, it's almost the same as about worrying about death. It's almost the same kind of inevitability is there. You know, so was such a strong at that time. So I didn't worry about that. Prabhupada, I'm going to read this in a temple today, in the prayers of Queen Kunti. Prabhupada gives a very nice purport. He says that women, they by nature very simple. And this simplicity, it's a great advantage. Because men tend to be, more intellectual, so-called. And that makes them more proud and more rigid and more, there are so many problems coming with this. It's an advantage and disadvantage at the same time. But Prabhupada says that women, they tend to be much more simple-hearted. And this simple-hearted nature allows them to accept Krishna in a very straightforward and simple manner. And because they're capable of doing this, they have actually greatest advantage in front of everyone else. And this prayer, Queen Kunti says that all the munis are there and they're trying to understand you, and still they can't understand you. So what to speak about us women? And Prabhupada says, actually, she wants to say that it's much easier for us to understand you than for all these munis and philosophers and, you know, big, big brains. Because of this simplicity and because of this nice nature which is there. And of course nowadays there is the modern civilization is trying to deprive women of this nature. We can see that there is everything is upside down, and you know there is men who are like women and women like men, you know, so many of them. So, but this is crazy. This is ridiculous. This is, one cannot be happy with all this strange situation. So the only, actually what Krishna says here in Bhagavad Gita, in a very simple language, he says, be yourself. And this is the most profound instruction which Krishna may give. He explains it in so many different ways. He says, try to do your duty rather than imitate somebody else. But the meaning of this instruction, which he repeats twice in Bhagavad Gita, is that be yourself. Don't try to follow somebody else's path. Don't try to achieve something which is not within your destination or your karma. Follow, be yourself. And to be yourself means, being ourselves means to be humble. And humility, we know, is the main quality for spiritual realization. Humility doesn't mean something artificial. Humility means, I am what I am, and that's what it is. And I am not trying to pretend somebody who I am not. I'm not trying to become somebody who I'm not. So the best instruction which Krishna gives to everyone, including women, is that be yourselves. It means be women, be nice, be simple, be simple-hearted, be kind-hearted. This is the instruction which Krishna gives. I'm not in a position to give you, because I know you already follow this path. But this is the best instruction which we can extract. be what we are, behave according to our nature and according to the duties which goes, dharma, which goes together with this nature. And by living in this way, we can live a very clean and simple and noble life. And ultimately that will be rewarded. And the reward is, as I said, as Queen Kunti says, the reward is that you understand Krishna. Because you can only understand Him by His mercy, and His mercy comes for those who are following their dharma and who become very simple and straightforward. And it's difficult nowadays, because the whole grain of the society is just, you know, it's just the whole tendencies in the society is opposite. Everything is so artificial, and it's becoming more and more artificial. Every day, the life becomes so artificial. The simplicity and the real nature is not there. It becomes more and more. Everything in the minds become artificial. Everything becomes artificial. But the best instruction is to get rid of all the artificiality and be what we are. People become offended nowadays. Nowadays, if you tell a woman that they should cook, they become very offended. Why? Because that's what it is. Because women should cook. What's wrong with it? But the whole society is really upside down. Thank you very much for your patience.